From the Radio Iowa studios in Des Moines, an interview with Governor Kim Reynolds discussing the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, Radio Iowa News Director O.K. Henderson.
Governor Reynolds, on this Friday morning, Friday afternoon, welcome to the Radio Iowa Network.
Oh, thanks, Kay. I really appreciate you setting this up and this opportunity. It's good to be with you.
Do you have any update on the number of Iowans who have been tested positive for COVID?
I do have the updates for today. So this is true last evening at 6 p.m. We are reporting 56 new cases for a total of 235. Today we had 765 total negative for today, so for a overall total of 3,740 negative cases. We have 32 hospitalized as of today. The number of new cases, the 56, includes 9 new counties for a total of 46 counties. And unfortunately, we had 2 more deaths.
Sad to hear, Governor. Many of our affiliate news directors have sent us a lot of questions for this time together. So let's start with one from Woody Gottberg from KSCJ in Sioux City. What are the factors to determine the all clear for returning to normal daily living? Do we have to wait until there is a vaccine?
No. A lot of times I've said on all of the decisions that I've put in place as a governor, we've based it on data. We've made those decisions working in coordination and collaboration with the Department of Public Health and their experts, their epidemiologist team, as well as they've worked in collaboration with CDC. And I also work with governors, and I'm on a call probably 3 times a week, if not more, with governors from across the state so that we can talk about, you know, what they're seeing in their states. Often they're ahead of the curve on us, so we can share best practices, things that they've done, things to look out for, things to anticipate. So the same thing, you know, we've talked a lot lately about metrics for shelter in place. It's the same type of metrics that the Department of Public Health have put together to help them make recommendations to me to make the decisions going forward. And so we'll use a lot of those same metrics as we think about, you know, dialing up more restrictions, but also dialing back and trying to stand businesses back up and be, you know, prepared to get this economy open again and going. Right now, you know, we're not there, of course, but you've heard the president talk also, and we're able to look at the metrics that they give me. They can do that kind of by community, region, and county by county. And so there may be opportunities in some areas of the state to do that, and some areas there may not.
Governor Ellis Kojo of KBIZ in Ottumwa asks, what is the timetable in Iowa for widespread testing for COVID-19?
Hi, this is Sarah Reestern, the Deputy Director of the Iowa Department of Public Health. And the timetable for widespread testing, I will tell you that we continue to expand capacity at the State Hygienic Lab nearly on a daily basis. Other health systems in the state are also gearing up to do their own testing within their facilities. And so I think as we proceed here over the next several weeks, we'll continue to see the number of tests that are conducted on a daily basis expand.
Did you have something else to share, Sarah, or Governor? We'll move on to the next question. This one comes from George Bauer from KICD in Spencer. He notes that neighboring states are preparing temporary triage centers and hotels and arenas. Are there plans to do that in Iowa, and how quickly could facilities be up and ready?
Yeah, so this is Sarah again. We are currently working within each of our healthcare coalitions on a regional level. And we've been doing that for years, but we are intensely having conversations with them currently to understand what their capacity is, both within their local communities, within their own individual counties, and then also as we expand out regionally to some of our more rural counties. that might normally have patient traffic patterns that would feed into our more metro locations. And so we're continuing to have those conversations. We have those conversations with Lynn and Johnson County over the weekend. We had them with Polk County yesterday. We anticipate having those conversations with Cerro Gordo County and Pottawatomie County and Woodbury County over the course of the next week as well.
And the only thing that I would add to that is I had the opportunity to sit down with all of the CEOs for the major hospitals and have been in close contact with the hospital association. And so they also, each one of them, have their own surge capacity plan in place to deal with this. And this will allow them to come together as a region and really talk about if they exceed their capacity, what is the total bed capacity. And then also a part of the coordination and collaboration that we have in place with the Iowa National Guard is they have regional medical coordination centers, and so they are also a part of this conversation too, just helping to facilitate the dialogue to make sure that we have a plan in place if we do happen to hit a surge and in certain areas throughout the state of Iowa.
Governor, with schools shut down and many Iowans trying to work from home, Brian Wilson of KLGA in Algona asks, if you have a clearer picture of where in the state rural broadband service must be expanded and therefore a plan for taking action.
We do. I mean, and we have really all along as we've worked to really build out our connectivity across the state. That's been a priority of mine for several years now in the legislature. And so, you know, unfortunately, you can't stand that up overnight. But what I have seen is from several of our our businesses, they are working with schools and working with areas to try to figure out a way to build out the capacity so they can meet the needs of just students across the state. And so today at the press conference, Director Lebo is going to give an update on the task force that they've put together to really take a look at what they're doing to provide online learning in the scenario that we continue past the projected shutdown that we've put in place right now. So that is also something that's continually discussed, and we're working with our providers all across the state, and they have stepped up and they're doing great things as well.
As the governor mentioned, she's been having daily news conferences at 2:30 in the afternoon, weekdays, and on Sundays out at the Iowa National Guard headquarters. Next question here, Governor. Radio Iowa Sports Director Todd Kim has been talking with sports reporters at our Radio Iowa affiliates. Could or should the seasons for Iowa high school spring sports be extended into the summer to give seniors a complete season? Perhaps some of these athletic scholarships could be in the balance.
You know, I don't know if I have an answer for that right now, but that's something that I can add to Director Lebo's list. I mean, she has almost a, you know, they were doing it 3 to 4 times a week call with the various superintendents across the state. So they are addressing issues just like that on these calls, but I'll make sure that that's something, then they probably are, but I'll just make sure that we make a note of that and make sure that they're considering that in the conversations that they're having. So, she will give an update later today.
Great. Next question. You've been holding these daily news conferences and discussing these shelter-in-place orders other governors in other states have issued. Joe Lancello of KBOE in Oskaloosa and Dave Vickers of KROS in Clinton ask, why is Iowa taking a different path?
Well, because, you know, I have to base my decisions on the metrics and the data that's provided to me, and I've done that with every decision that we've made. And so we sat down with the Department of Public Health, and they put some metrics for us to take a look at that they can do statewide to base our decisions on whether we need to shelter in place or not. That's based on the percentage of population greater than 65 years of age, the percentage of identified cases requiring hospitalization, the rate per 100,000 in the past 14 days, and then the number of long-term care outbreaks. Now, that's part of the metrics that they're looking at when they're making those decisions. But I'm going to pass it over to Sarah, and she can be a little bit more specific in some of the other factors that are going into the recommendations that they're making to me as we move through the crisis.
Ken Hughey sorry, Sarah, did you have something to add?
I want her to expand on that just a little bit.
So I was just going to add that, in addition to all of the metrics that the governor just laid out, we are looking at that not only at a statewide level, but also at a community by community level. And so we are fully prepared in the event that we think that additional step is necessary. We are fully prepared to make that recommendation to the governor. I would also add that with the closures that she has already ordered, I think that to the extent that people locally can continue to enhance those messages and communicate those messages to people, stay home as much as possible, especially when people are ill, when you're out in public, practice social distancing, continuing to do all of those things and reinforcing those messages at the community level, we really hope that that leads to slowing the spread of the virus so we don't get to the point where we do have to recommend shelter in place.
We actually, because of the practices that we put in place, a lot of the guides from other states, most of their proclamation are identifying essential workforce and who is allowed still to work. So as Sarah said, with the mitigation efforts that we've already put in place, and if people do what they're supposed to do, we think that that's really not even necessary. I'll give you Minnesota put in a shelter in place, and it exempts 78% of the jobs from the governor's order as essential workers. So really, we just can follow through with the recommendations that we put in place. I think that we'll be able to slow the spread and just mitigate and hopefully get things back to normal sooner rather than later. And that's the goal of everybody.
For those of our listeners who are just joining us, you're hearing the voices of Sarah Reister from the Iowa Department of Public Health and Governor Kim Reynolds, who are joining us by phone. I am in the Radio Iowa studios in Des Moines. We are practicing social distancing, if you will. Ken Hughey of KFJB in Marshalltown says Iowans realize how important the data you're referring to is when making decisions in the midst of this pandemic. He asks, how much does the human factor enter into these metrics?
Okay, I guess I would ask for maybe a little more information about what he's referring to when he's talking about the human factor. I mean, our focus at the Department of Public Health, and I know it's the focus of Governor Reynolds as well, we are completely focused on the health and safety of Iowans as we move through this pandemic. And so all of the information that we're looking at and all of the recommendations that we're making are focused at making sure that that Iowans know what they need to do to keep themselves, their families, and their communities as safe and healthy as possible as we move through this experience.
Moving on to the next question, Dennis Morris of KLEM and Lamar's asks, what are the consequences or penalties for businesses that fail to comply with the order to close? And do you expect lawsuits from small businesses over your proclamations?
Well, I can't anticipate, I hope not. We have that procedure in place for very incidences just like this. Right now we're, working with local law enforcement to make sure that we're enforcing it. But, here's what I would say to that. Iowans are doing the right thing. They know how important it is. We have said over and over, if Iowans do the right thing, then we can protect the health and safety of especially, older, more vulnerable Iowans that have underlying conditions that are really susceptible to COVID-19. And so if we all do our part now and maybe have to put up with some inconveniences, and I know the decisions that I've made have, consequences to Iowans and businesses. And we've also tried to take the steps to make sure that we have, unemployment, and we're getting those payments out to make sure that we're doing standing small businesses back up, working with our federal government and the CARES Act that hopefully will pass today. So, we're working with local law enforcement, but what I've seen from Iowans is they are doing what they're supposed to be doing, and they are working collectively to help manage and take care of all Iowans.
Next question comes from Timothy Dill from KGRN in Grinnell. He asks, do local school boards have the power to override your recommendation on how long the school year should be suspended? Do you have to enact a state law waiving any high school graduation requirements if closures extend through the end of the spring semester?
And I actually didn't mandate school closings. I recommended it based on when we went into substantial spread. At that point, I made the recommendations to shut down some of the businesses, to close schools to do it for 4 weeks. I said that we would reevaluate in 2 weeks, and same thing with the businesses. I shut them down for 2 weeks and say that we would reevaluate, as we moved through this. And so right now it is a recommendation. The legislature did act before they suspended their session to say that the 4 weeks that we had recommended that schools shut down, they didn't have to make up the days that are lost in the 4 weeks. Now, as we go further, those are some of the other things that we'll have to address. But again, Director Lebo is working on those answers, and we will be, we'll be continuing to provide those to superintendents and school districts and school boards as we move through this process.
Teresa Rose of KILJ in Mount Pleasant and Pat Powers of KWQC in Webster City have a similar question. Beyond immediate help like the Small Business State Grant Program you announced earlier this week, what sort of long-term direct assistance for individuals or businesses are you planning, since this financial hit may last a while?
Well, Debbie, at the Iowa Economic Development Authority stood up a small business grant program, and that was basically just a stopgap until we, saw what they were doing at the federal level. The CARES Act will really provide relief for individuals making $100,000 or less will get a check, I think, for $1,200. And for any child, it will be an additional $500. Joint filers under $200,000 will receive a check for $2,400, $500 for additional child. But that's individual. But as a part of that, there's also $350 billion that will be available for small businesses, 500 employees or fewer. And if they, with loans up to $10 million, loans will be forgiven if they maintain payroll or keep their employees hired. So we're waiting to see what that looks like, the final version. I'm hoping the House is passing it today. I don't know where they're at with that right now. But our team is continually to work with not only Debbie, Iowa Economic Development Authority, but the Department of Revenue. And we'll continue to look to see what we need to do to fill the gaps, not only at the federal level, but at the state level.
Here's another question from George Bauer at KICD in Spencer. Are there state incentives for businesses that produce scarce products like medical supplies?
There is not yet, but also that is something that we've taken a look at. But I will tell you what I've seen. Again, it's just Iowans. It's who we are. The number of businesses that have called in to say, what can I do? How can I help? How can I retrofit? Has been just heartwarming, and really, I just think that says a lot to who we are as a people. And so, we're looking at that. We have looked at that, but right now, the amount of individuals and businesses that have stepped up to say, "What can I do to help?" has been phenomenal.
Joe Lancello at KBOE in Oskaloosa offers another question. How many people in Iowa have died from the regular flu this season? I believe by the end of February, that number was 29. And is that what the future would look like with COVID-19 if there is a vaccine?
So we can get back.
Have the number. Hi.
Okay.
I don't have a number of flu deaths right in my hands right now where I'm sitting. I think that, our hope would be, as it relates to the coronavirus, that people, and I know people are working on a vaccine, those things do take time. And that's really why the social distancing and the, spread mitigation guidance is so important, because until a vaccine becomes available, I think public health experts believe that this virus is going to continue to circulate not only within Iowa, but, kind of around the world.
We're nearing the end of the show, Governor. Do you have one sentence to leave Iowans with?
Well, I just want to say thank you for all that you're doing. I know Iowans understand the magnitude of the COVID-19, and it's important that all of them take every precaution to protect themselves, their families, and their communities. And if they do that, we will get through this and back to normal sooner rather than later.
On behalf of the stations that are part of the Radio Iowa Network, thank you very much, Governor Reynolds. Thank you for taking time today to answer these questions and help us broadcast information from the top decision maker in state government to our listeners throughout the state.